Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. This week, our special guest is once again Leslie Appleton-Young. She's the Vice President and Chief Economist for the California Association of Realtors, a statewide trade organization with over 165,000 members dedicated to advancement of professionalism in real estate. Leslie directs the activities of the association's member information group. She oversees the analysis of housing markets and brokerage industry trends, member communications, and membership development activities. She's also closely involved in the association's strategic planning efforts and is a well-known speaker in California's real estate community. Leslie, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Nice to be here.
As I was driving in, I was listening to the radio, and UCLA Business School of Anderson came out with a projection that unemployment in California will be double digits until 2013.
Right.
That's a big number.
Well, it is a big number, and it doesn't surprise me. You know, we've got a lot of job challenges. I mean, part of what we're experiencing is cyclical job loss because there are very few sectors that haven't been impacted. And to a certain extent, part of it's structural. You know, offshoring jobs to lower wage countries has been around a long time. jobs are disappearing because of it.
In the 90s, when we had the downturn, there were job losses that were kind of concentrated in California, and we lost a lot of migration. This time, it's kind of a national picture, so I was just curious, is the migration still a big problem as far as people leaving?
You know, I don't know what the latest, I just can't pull out of my head right now what the latest number.
Well, the latest number is usually a year late or old anyway. But.
Right. Exactly. But I certainly don't think that's the main driver. I think it really has been the restructuring of corporations and businesses based on a really challenging economy. And with, 70%+ of costs directly tied to labor in one form or another, and then we can talk about healthcare and the other costs on top of that, the easiest way to become more efficient is to do more with fewer workers. Mm-hmm. And that's what companies have been doing the last couple of years. So when we are in a growth economy, which we actually have been now for quite some time, it seems to be taking a while for, there are good signs. I mean, the data that came out earlier this week on employment looked very positive. It exceeded expectations. There's more business confidence. So things always turn around. It's just going to take a while.
We probably are going to be looking at some gas prices that might be pretty ugly later this year. Does that have an impact on real estate as well?
I think it's a big wild card because it impacts real estate because it impacts the overall economy. It means there's less discretionary income available to purchase other things. What we've seen also in other cycles is that the cost of gas impacts people's ability to move further out. So, just they kind of add that on to their commuting time. So it has a direct impact, and it also has just an indirect impact. And nobody knows right now how the situation in the Middle East is going to shake out. I think the LA UCLA forecast the most recent one kind of assumed that there wouldn't be any kind of significant long-term reductions in supply, and that we'd be able to weather the increases, and hopefully that's the case. But again, nobody knows at this point.
No, that's a very big wild card.
Yeah.
How is California viewed as attractive to businesses?
You know, I think it's been a challenge, and you do hear from the business community how difficult local and state regulations are, taxes. So on the one hand, you do have that. On the other hand, you know, we're California, and we're, you know, the most populous state in the country, and we've got this wonderful location that's near the Pacific Rim, and we've got Mexico close by, and we've got Canada not so far away, and a lot, we've got, you know, we've got entertainment, you know, the whole Chamber of Commerce spiel and Silicon Valley. Well, the reality is it's true. And so there's a lot of reasons, to be here. But when you look at the outsourcing that's gone on, you know, to other states as well as to overseas, a lot of that has already happened, you know, with call centers and manufacturing and production. But there are a whole other component of the economy that needs to be local, right? So all services and haircuts and all those kinds of things you can't outsource. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, I guess I would say.
You know, one of the things we had touched on basically affordability just a little bit. Affordability is probably close to an all-time high, but I was curious, in relationship to the United States affordability, I would think that we've never been this close.
No, that gap has been much reduced. Although I will say, you know, you still have a fairly significant gap, if you will, between the California median home price and the U.S. median home price. So the California median peaked at about $594,000. The U.S. Peaked at $230,000. So we were well over twice.
Mm-hmm.
The current kind of ratio is the California median's around $300,000. The U.S. median is around $170,000. So there's still a fairly big gap. Comparing the state to the nation as a whole. But all that being said, I think we both are, you know, and hopefully all your listeners are of course aware how, you know, how different local real estate conditions are. And when you look at some of the areas in the state, you know, the Inland Empire up through north of Sacramento, affordability is just absolutely phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because prices have come down so sharply, and mortgage rates are incredibly attractive, and FHA is there. So there's a lot of differentiation that underlies those aggregate numbers. But to your initial question, absolutely, the gap between affordability in California and the U.S. has narrowed significantly.
And I guess why I'm asking is I think that might surprise us with some bonus migration we weren't expecting. Because given everything being equal, I think we win that battle. Somebody.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought of that, but I think that's an excellent point. And I, you know, the challenge is the migration probably also depends on job opportunities.
Sure. Well,
and so they kind of go hand in hand.
I think what's going to play out is kind of interesting, and it's never happened to this extent. You have a bunch of people that can't buy right now, so they've gotten credit damaged or they lost money. It doesn't mean they don't want to buy. It just means they have to hit the pause button. But they're going to emerge somewhere down the line.
Right.
And same thing with migration. We don't have job picture fixed yet, but we will. And when we do, we'll get those people. And what's interesting, and you and I off air had shared just a statistic that I watch, is that in a county like Riverside, where it's very common to develop 250 to 300 subdivisions a year, we're down to something like 10. There's going to be this demand hit no new homes. They can't develop lots and get them, you know, and put a house on them overnight.
Right.
So it's going to be very interesting. You're going to have demand pop up from all these other factors, and the inventory that's been bought in years like this year will probably get to run up in price a little bit, it'd be my guess, just because of the demand.
Yeah, I would think so too, sure.
So that
and you know, remember, you've got had a pretty sharp increase in kind of the density of household size the last couple of years as, you know, parents have moved in with kids and kids have moved back in, and you've got two or three generations, and it's just been one of the ways that people have tried to weather weather the storm. And again, as we come out of that, there's this, you know, demand in the wings that's going to be able to actualize, you know, home ownership as well.
Yeah, that's another good point. I hadn't thought about that, but that will emerge as a new household. But it really was an old household that decided to go together with others.
Right, right.
That makes sense.
Yep.
The trend, there's a Time magazine article, you know, rethinking home ownership, things like that, and the 31-page report talking about unwinding Fannie and Freddie.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your general sense when we look, let's say we go out 5 years.
Right.
What do you think will have transpired that will change the landscape of real estate?
Well, I think that we will be in an environment where financing a home purchase will be more expensive than it is today, both in terms of down payment requirements as well as rates. I don't think there's really any way to get around that. Winding down Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac is going to have reverberations for years to come. And my guess is that this will happen very gradually. So perhaps even 5 years from now, the impact will still be, you know, yet to be fully realized. But there's no doubt that that implicit government guarantee that the government-sponsored enterprises enjoyed for many years is going to be, you know, replaced with the private sector that is going to be demanding, you know, higher risk premiums in order to originate and either, you know, hold the loans in portfolio or package and, you know, pass them on to investors. So it's going to be a very different type of market. I think in terms of the kind of demand, aspirational goal of home ownership, you know, I look at the last couple of years, and I think certainly that has changed for some people. You know, it didn't work out, and they may be a little gun shy. But on the other hand, there have been a number of surveys. I think I mentioned this earlier, done by, I know, Fannie Mae and several others on home ownership, and it's still a very strong aspirational goal of households. So I don't see that changing, because unlike, you know, other types of investments and expenditures, you need somewhere to live, and that kind of changes the equation for housing as opposed to other types of expenditures and investments. But I do think we will see a world in which financing will be a bigger consideration and a bigger burden. And like I think has characterized the market the last couple of years, much more difficult to obtain than we saw during the boom. And I'm not comfortable weighing in on the future of the 30-year mortgage 100%, but I think we do need to look to consider the fact that it may be an endangered species going forward.
Well, I mean, if you think about what you've just said, which I think this is where we're headed, you have to be headed to a lower percentage of homeowners. To me, that has to emerge. And,
right.
And then you all of a sudden you start talking about when you vote for legislation, if not the majority of your people benefit by ownership, then you really start thinking, well, do we want to subsidize it with tax benefits and all of that? So this is serious stuff. And one of the reasons why I'm kind of passionate about this is I think it's complete overkill.
Right.
We've already had a playbook that we saw work for decades. In business, when you have an advertising campaign and that you know works, that's called a control piece. You do the same mailer and you know you get a certain percentage response. And the only way you change that control piece is one thing at a time to see if something emerges better or worse. What we did is we had this control piece called a Nothing Down VA Loan, and we know that it produce less than 1% foreclosures. And FHA did the same thing for a long time. What we did is we skewed everything in about a 5-year period, and we changed and got this result. But I don't understand why we can't go back and say, okay, we already know that what we did wrong. Let's go back to what we had instead of overkill. Because to me, this is really going to change the landscape of real estate.
And, I could not agree more. And one thing I just wanted to interject in terms of hardcore data is that one of the slides that we have been referring to here at CAR is one that compares the percent of loans 90 days delinquent or more based on origination, and looks at the experience based on the year of origination, and compares the GSEs to the private label mortgage-backed securities. And I just want to share a few numbers with you. In 2005, the GSE, and that's Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, delinquency rate was 7.8%. Private label was 28.6.
Mm-hmm.
In 06, GSE 13.2% delinquency, private label 45.1. For loans originated in 07, the GSE delinquency rate had doubled. It was 14.9%. Private label was 42.2%. And again, I think that's the type of information that is being either overlooked or ignored in this discussion about what things should look like going forward, because Fannie and Freddie worked until 05 and 06 when they decided to get into the subprime Alt-A, market. And if they had just stayed out of it, it obviously hindsight is 20/20, things would have turned out very differently.
Well, I don't care what loan category you were in, you would be suffering if they're allowed to be a subprime world. If Fannie and Freddie didn't even touch it, you still would have had so much inventory that got overpriced because of that easy financing that it would have sucked up even qualified people into a different price range than they should have been able to get. So
right.
What we did wrong was pretend it was okay to loan people money when they got to state their income. They didn't have a down. Credit didn't matter because we could sell the paper somewhere else and get off of the long-term responsibility. Those are the things we know we can't do. But we can avoid that and still have the same structure we've had before, and for decades it's worked.
Yeah, I think the only other thing I want to add to that, and it's something that I feel very strongly about, and that is how cash out refis are treated in the system going forward. Because when you look at, there was a professor who spoke, Michael LaCour Little spoke at our expo in October and presented the findings of an academic paper that essentially came to the conclusion that 39% of the defaults between 2006 and 2008 were due to home equity borrowing. And that's, again, something that, 20, 30 years ago didn't happen. People actually paid off their mortgage, and I don't think we'll ever go back to that world. But the idea that you purchase a home and put 30% down, and within a year you owe more than the home is worth because you've taken cash out, is behavior that's not healthy for the homeowner or the market.
That's interesting. I don't know if I agree with that, because, again, I think it might be skewed. You picked the right years to make that statement. I don't know.
Right, right.
If you went back to all the other years prior to that, I think you would find it would be pretty benign.
Yeah, well, and it wasn't that easy to do either. You didn't have HELOCs all,
correct,
20 years ago. So, again, there's a lot of benefits to having the equity in a home be part of your liquid or more liquid portfolio, if you will. But I just want to make the point that there's a downside, and it really became toxic during the boom bust of the last cycle, because people put down payment, people that even put significant down payments into their homes ended up with absolutely no cushion when prices went down.
Correct. One of the things that there was some report I read, and it had two charts, and one of them was FHA's transition to unsustainable lending. And it basically took you through the history of FHA. So back in 34, they did 80% LTV loans, so 20% down. They were really almost Fannie and Freddie. Right. And they had 20-year loans. And then gradually we got to 25 years and 30 years, and the down payment went from 20 to 10 to 5 to 3. The chart that concerns me is the one that's after that. And what it's talking about is going back and reverting to a very different number dollar-wise that they will they want FHA to get to.
Right.
And it's not... it wouldn't be a pleasant journey because it literally would be about at 100% of median price to an area,
right?
Which would be a very different loan amount than what we currently have.
No, absolutely.
And as an investor, I remember when I bought a house, and it seemed like every year there would be a bump up in loan limits. So they would analyze something and say, "Oh, California now has a $150,000 loan limit instead of $135,000." Invariably, prices would run very quickly up to that next loan number, and I'm concerned about doing it in reverse. That if you do that, if you lower those numbers too drastically, you're going to have quite a significant price drop, and then you're going to have this continual negative equity position.
Exactly. It's just going to exacerbate the market further.
Yes, yeah, so I hope calmer heads prevail when they start unwinding this.
I do too, and
this.
I think to your point, the pendulum tends to swing too far one way and too far the other way, and hopefully there'll be enough opportunity for dialogue to make sure that doesn't happen. But I'm a little pessimistic given the tenor of the discussion on Capitol Hill, to be perfectly frank.
Oh, absolutely. It seems like it's very politically expedient all of a sudden to talk about ownership, home ownership, not in the same category as it once was. And I can tell you from my own perspective, when I was a young man and I got married very young, I remember still to this day getting to mow my own grass for the first time. And I didn't have one dime of equity, but I felt like a man, honestly, for the first time.
Right.
That was part of the deal.
Yeah.
And, I've gone on to buy a few more houses than that, but it changed how I felt about myself. And I think people like getting their say inside of their 7,000 square foot lot.
Absolutely. It's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
It's a very big deal.
And it's a big deal why people come here, migrate here.
Yeah.
You talk to that. I think they sometimes have a much bigger grasp on how special that is because maybe where they came from, that wasn't available.
Right.
And we kind of take for granted some of the things that we've had, and maybe we should remind them. And I think that's one of the things that, CAR and NAR and groups that have membership in large quantities, you will have an audience, I'm sure, and a voice.
Yeah, well, I hope so, and certainly there are a lot of voices out there, and politics is iffy. I don't know. Hard to call.
I would be very frustrated if I feel like this. And I was talking to the president of MERS, actually, and we didn't really get on that subject, but I had him on as a guest, and I watched his him be questioned in front of the Senate. And the one thing that struck me that was very frustrating is not one of those senators read his deposition in advance. There is no way.
Right.
And I just thought, something that important, instead of just being able to say, whatever you're doing for your constituency, why not take an hour and read the man's deposition and solve the problem?
Right.
And this is one of those cases where real estate is going to take a turn, and it needs to, if it's going to take a turn that makes it tougher to get in, it better be for all the right reasons, not political ones,
I hope so, too, and I certainly understand, everybody's overload, but we're really playing with fire here. We need to continue to see a stabilization in housing prices and housing activity for the good of the overall economy. So it's the stakes are very high.
We're out of time. Leslie, thank you so much for joining us. CAR's website, www.car.org. Leslie, thanks so much.
Bruce, my pleasure. Anytime.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.